Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, Sal. Yourself?
Outstanding.
What do you got for us today?
Our favorite technical agronomist, Premier Ag's technical agronomist, is in the house, as the kids would say. In the podcast studio. And Glenn Longaball needs no introduction. He's got groupies on the podcast now that follow him. But Glenn, before we get started, the question of the day. And we had a little bit of a controversy with this. We think you may have had this one before, but you're such an interesting man that you may have more. Tell us something about yourself that most folks wouldn't know.
Well, there's lots of things there are lots of things I try to hide from the general public, right? So,
and we can't talk about your witness protection.
Yeah, okay. Or any of your aliases.
There you go. And so I think we've talked about the fact that I like to stick arrows through poor defenseless critters.
And what is it about this company and little furry animals that have...
I think it's just agriculture.
It's just ag.
It has that attraction to people.
They eat your crops all year, so you get to harvest them in the fall. Yeah, so there you go.
But, I did think about this on the way over. This one, you didn't blindside me, but because we have talked about so many things in the past that people wouldn't know about me, I was trying to think of something different. And one of the things that has really changed my nature is the fact that we have a son that's handicapped. Donna and I have a son that's 33 years old, born with spina bifida, and has become he's useful. He has a job and works outside the home, but still it literally has an impact on how you approach almost everything after you have a child that is a dependent, that you're confident will be potentially dependent forever. Right. And so how you look at farming, how you look at succession planning, even your day job is completely and totally changed from that point on.
Well, I'll have to say that it has never been an obstacle that you have not got around because of our, explain the hunting, the rickshaw that you made.
This is
worth the 3 minutes to hear this.
So when Nathan was younger, when he was real young, I just carried him everywhere. Of course, I was in a lot better shape and it wasn't uncommon. And I wanted to pass that legacy of my passion for hunting. And when Nathan was real little, I wouldn't let him use a crossbow. I made him practice with a regular bow, even though, you know, it's like balancing on your butt for him to shoot a gun or a bow, either one, because he has no feeling from about the waist down. But yeah, to get around, as he got bigger and it was harder for me to carry him over, you know, maybe a quarter section or maybe, you know, half mile at the most. We built what we called the Turkey Rickshaw, and it's two wheelchair wheels hooked into a little framework. And basically I would stand in the front of it like a rickshaw and pull him around the farm. And we still use it some today, but it's pretty hard on O'Dad because Nathan actually weighs considerably more than I do now. So
I just pictured you getting into like a mule harness and, off you go.
Yeah, I'm not very proud of this, but it's caused me to have several cussing fits out. You know, there's nothing like going out to have an enjoyable morning of hunting and then you're stuck on a log and you know, you're trying to communicate, you know, hey, give me a hand back there. And you're trying to do this without making a lot of noise. And yeah, it's pretty frustrating.
No, you never.
Today, we just use the Ranger. You know, we just take some kind of ATV, drive to the blind, have a drive-by. I push him off the machine.
Oh, my God.
No, I don't push him off the machine.
You never put him on one of your homemade zip lines, did you?
I never have.
Good. No, thank goodness.
No.
I was going to call protective services, even though.
Yeah. No, I saved that kind of stuff for my for my own mortality.
Jeff, what is something about you that we don't know?
I don't know. That's, I didn't read the notes. So this one kind of got sprung on me. So, this is one of those that I really didn't have any time to prepare. I don't think I've got any real fascinating hidden things that nobody knows about, but, one of the things that most people don't realize is that, my wife and I, we didn't come from big families, but we've evolved into a big family and we have seven children. And now that we're entering the grandchildren phase, it's, you know, we, with all the in-laws, and now we've got five grandkids, and I probably the most thing that people wouldn't know is I've got two more grandkids due this summer. So
I didn't know that.
That's kind of the exciting news.
Congratulations.
So we're going to be up to seven grandchildren after the summer of 25. So pretty excited.
Boom.
That is boom.
Grandkids are way more fun than kids.
Absolutely. We've got one in the oven right now too. And we're ecstatic. Yeah.
Perfect.
So, mine's probably pretty simple. I think everybody probably knows by now. I like heavy equipment. I like to push dirt around, push trees down. And I'm going to change this up a little bit, but most people wouldn't know how selfish my wife is, because now I'm wanting to buy.
What?
What? Don't give me a raspberry.
This has been like
on the podcast.
I thought we were going into therapy, and it's like, but no one knows how selfish my wife is.
So Case has got this skid steer that's got a 6-way blade. They're called the Matador, I think, or Matador.
Matador would make more sense, I bet.
I don't know, yeah. But it's got a 6-way dozer blade that's got a big C hookup that goes around the frame.
Okay,
and it is two machines in one, literally. It's got steel tracks
on it. So you're gonna sell a machine? Because if this is two machines in one and you get it, that means it's replacing something, so you need to get rid of something.
So I thought that if I could get rid of a skid steer, sell a skid steer and buy this machine, but she just, she's selfish and she does not see the big picture about the, she won't talk about replacing the excavator. So the secret is I'm never going to sell anything anymore, because I don't know when I'll be get the green light again.
I got you.
So anyway, so hopefully hopefully she doesn't listen to this episode.
And you know, the morning we get the call that she smothered Sal with a pillow, oh my God. Nobody's going to be surprised.
That's true. Very true. Yeah.
It's always the spouse. No, she's a saint. She is.
Yes, she is.
Absolutely. She is a saint. So Glenn, let's get on track with agronomy. So you've got a series that you're kind of, thought about and, it's thriving or surviving in 2025. Is that right?
That's correct. That is actually the right title.
Give us an overview, just an overview of, and you're thinking about doing some grower meetings here in the Premier Ag territory. As our technical agronomist, you're front of the room most times when there's a group together.
Yep.
And so what brought about the thought and the topic, and what are you thinking?
Well, it's the time of the year, right? You know, and I'm always looking just forward, right? What's on the next horizon? What is that we need our growers focused on so they can be more successful? And, you know, there's a lot of pressures out there. We went through a fall with modest commodity prices and in most cases, a pretty good crop. Not everybody had a great crop, and I would hate to say that, oh yeah, everybody had an outstanding crop. If you didn't have a great crop, then you were, you know, you'd really feel left out, right? Because if you don't have price and you don't have yield, then that's really a bad day.
Yeah.
But I think most of our growers in the Premier service area had a pretty decent corn crop. I think they thought they had a fairly average soybean crop, with exceptions both ways, right?
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, when you're in times of modest commodity prices, then there's always this tendency when you get to the first bifurcation in the road, right, is am I going to go down the path of what has been successful in the past? Am I going down this path of increasing yields, right, to where I'm more competitive than somebody else? Or do I go down this path of trying to limit my exposure of risk by reducing costs, right? And that seems like a pretty easy place to start. Yeah. But in reality, we always put too much weight on the cost of inputs, and we put too little value on the value of increasing yields, right?
Is that because kind of the immediacy, you kind of...
That's right.
You feel it quick. I mean, you feel it.
Yeah. When you're doing a cash flow and you look at the big number at the end of the page, right? It's like, oh my gosh, we're, you know, on 1,000 acres, we're, you know, we're making an investment of 600,000 or 500,000 or whatever that number is, right?
Yeah.
In some cases, you know, if you're all corn, it could be potentially a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Right. But it's really about helping growers. You know, I want to have this time before they make those final decisions. I just like to have a little bit of time with them to help them navigate what is really important, what is not important, right? And as far as having this thing completely thought out, literally, I pulled over to the side of the road this morning, right? Pulled up a cash flow, and one analysis that I had not done was on just average ground, right? Average rents, right? What I would consider to be a fairly average rent. I had not done an analysis of what percentage do we spend on seed? What percentage do we spend on fertilizer? What percentage do we spend on crop protection? And actually, I was flabbergasted, right? If you thought, boy, I'm going to go non-GMO and I'm going to save myself $110 or $120 a unit on seed, you know, that doesn't come with no cost, right? It looks like a big savings, but if you don't get the same yield, or if it takes more crop protection dollars to protect that crop, and you have fewer offerings as far as traits, then, you know, seed itself is probably only 18% of your total of your total spend on inputs, right? So even if you reduce that by 4 or 5%, your exposure for risk, right? It's making big changes is often a good way to get yourself in trouble, right? So in a year like this, I'm going to try to go through, these are the things. If you remember 2 years ago in the spring, we had a group of meetings that were really around, hey, these are the things you need to focus on as we go into spring, right? It was around, fertility. It was around planting excellence, right? Mm-hmm. It'll be in the same theme as that. But it'll maybe have a little, you know, it'll have some economics in there. It'll be time. We'll certainly talk about your favorite topic, which is around fungicides and fungicide use, yep. Fertility, right? We've got a time here where, Jeff is just robbing us blind over here.
Every chance we get. No.
Jeff sets the fertilizer pricing.
Yeah. So. Jeff sets the fertilizer pricing. So I was just whipping
pick on the four fertilizer guy.
Yeah, just picking on the fertilizer. It's just what everybody was thinking, Jeff.
Sure.
No.
Or Jeff, at least one.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was totally, I was being totally facetious. We have all these places that we could potentially spend our money. What are the things that are the have to haves, and what are the things that are the want to haves?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, what's interesting, and I haven't seen this for every farm, but I know what my capital expenditures are versus the ground. And I feel like I'm way over supplied with paint, right? And yet when I look at other farms and proportional to their size. And I'm not saying that we don't all need, we need to have functional, we need to have equipment that we can be timely and operational whenever it's time to be operational. But, when you look at that variable cost for equipment, whether it's planting, harvesting, yeah. hauling, you look at that number, that percentage is way higher probably than what it, than if you're ever going to trim, that's the place that you probably should trim. Right. And yet that's the last place that most growers want to try to trim. Right.
You get shot in some of, in front of a crowd, just start telling them to cut a clip.
Absolutely. Yeah. So next week I'm going to do PARP training in front of Ride Implement over here. So you can't air this before that. They might want to shoot me.
But I tell you, of everything that you spend on the crop, that is probably the most fun.
It is. It absolutely is the most fun.
You spend all of your, that's where you spend your time. That's where you, and certainly, that is the, that's how it happens.
Yeah, that's how it happens. And, in full disclosure, there are times when if you're going to spend money on paint, this would be an excellent year, right? If you don't think that the farm economy isn't down, just look at the price of tractors, combines, most of this paint is, probably down 25% to 30%.
Used or?
On used equipment. Yeah. This used equipment market is really, really soft right now. So, if you did need to update something and you had already budgeted for that, this would absolutely be a great time. And one of the reasons why it's so soft is because people don't have the money, right? We got a lot of grains headed to market today. You're seeing all the grain trucks, guys are moving grain at a high rate of speed. Fortunately, by the way, we have had a couple of good days in the market. That's a good day. I got to sell some beans yesterday for, it was on like a Max Min, a accumulator, it's where they use options to kind of help with the pricing. and got to sell some soybeans yesterday at like an 11:35 target and a 10:30 floor, I believe is what it was.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, you know, if I can, if that contract at the end of the day, it doesn't, you know, it has a knockout, but it's a knockout where it prices the bushels at the floor. You know, let's say it gets knocked out halfway through the summer. I mean, that still would potentially be, you know, somewhere in the upper $10 range, almost $11 soybeans. That's
pretty good. Good day.
That's a pretty good day, right? And I really, you know, I don't want anybody on this, you know, listening to this podcast to ever take marketing advice from me because I'm the worst grain marketer. But I suspect that there's going to be a day this spring when we look back on this time and say, what in the heck was I thinking? Why did I not just sell the entire crop, right? And of course, nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to sell. No, most growers never sell more than about half of a half a crop, right? Because that's what the old timers said. And that's once you get above 25%, you start feeling icky. What if I don't have a crop, right? And so that's kind of the old saying, never market more than half of a half a crop.
I don't think you're allowed to be a farmer if you're not willing to say, what if I don't have a crop?
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. We all, you know, at the surface, we're all pessimists, right? When we go to the coffee shop, when I'm talking to you fellas, I'm almost always, you know, pessimistic by nature, especially being an agronomist, because I've seen almost every possible thing that can go wrong.
You get called when things have gone horribly wrong.
Exactly.
That's whenever the phone rings.
Exactly. But
by definition, to be a farmer, you have to be an optimist.
You have to be an optimist. If you weren't an optimist, you couldn't survive.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Because we all are optimists, right? We're, and you know what? The market and the trends and the ebb and flow of economics, makes us optimists, right? If you think about it, most of the years when you go into this, you think back on the best years we've had and some of the worst years we've had. On those best years, you typically go into the spring. You know, it's like, man, I'm gonna do everything I can do to make a good crop, but I'm not gonna spend any extra. And those are the years when, at the end of the day, you had a good crop and you end up getting a fairly decent price,
yep.
And you had a good year, right? And now you don't have enough. You didn't have enough capital expenditures to get rid of the wealth. Oftentimes, one of the worst years is when you go into the spring, you just sold a big crop, you go into the spring with good commodity prices, and you're like, man, oh, man, oh, man, I can be a drunken sailor, right? And you make a bunch of capital expenditures that have nothing to do with the actual crop. It has more to do with your ego. And then as the season wears on, the wheels come off of the crop or you know, the more likely the wheels come off of the price, right?
So when you're in your meetings, I've heard you say this before, once you get that crop planted, that's when the real management starts.
Absolutely.
And you can never quit on that crop. So how do you balance that? Not quitting on the crop, but you also don't know exactly what the outcome's going to be. You're speculating.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a poker player, but if I was a poker player, that's probably the best way to describe it. You don't have to raise, right? There's certain things you have to do, right? When you plant that crop, you better be an optimist. You better believe I'm going to plant a population. I'm going to put all the groceries to it that I need to put on early to make sure that I give it every opportunity, right? Because when the seed's in the bag, it still has the most potential, right? Once you put it in the ground, right? You want to put it in the ground with the highest potential. You want to put the inputs early, you know, those that are necessities for early season. You want to have those all done. And then as the season goes on, it's not a function of, you know, I've heard people describe as, oh, well, you put your foot on the gas or your foot on the brake. No, 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 no. We never put our foot on the brake, right? We never abandon the crop. But certainly if you're sitting there with two tens and in your card game, another 10 is turned up, then absolutely you put your foot on the gas, right?
Yeah.
You're going to continue to invest in that crop. And most times that's a really good strategy, right? Yeah. You know, what I would love to tell growers is that things like fungicides and nutritionals, those oftentimes don't get utilized simply because money is tight in season. It's not that they don't believe they've got a really good crop going, but they don't feel like they're going to be disadvantaged, right? If they don't spend that money. And yet that's oftentimes when you get the biggest return on investment. biggest return on investment isn't trying to salvage a half-ass crop into a common crop. It's taking a really good crop into an exceptional crop.
Right? Yeah.
That's really the opportunity. And yet almost every year now that we've had, you know, tar spot with some regularity, we've had Southern rust, you know, fungicides, probably the single best advantage, you know, using fungicides doesn't ensure that you're going to make an outstanding yield, but certainly, it's a prerequisite, right? You can't hardly make an outstanding yield without fungicides.
Yeah.
So
very good. Well, it sounds like that's going to be pretty interesting. So we'll get some dates.
No, should be a great time. And we'll try to make it interactive, right? A lot of times I get up and I lecture. We might do this as chapters and, you know, try to, and I think we're probably going to do these at our PARP trainings. So there'll be some PARP points with that.
What does PARP stand for?
Yeah, it's private applicator.
Don't look at Sal because he has no clue. I've asked him this question before.
He likes to bring this on the live on the podcast.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good, I can't remember what the R is for.
Yeah. Nobody can. I don't think there is a word.
Re-educational point, something like that. I don't remember what the PARP is for, but it's private applicator, re-education point, something to that
I'm effect. Against initialism.
Acronyms?
Yes, acronyms. I am against them.
Initialism.
I've been harping this on Sal for 2 years for the definition of PARP, and he can't do it.
Yeah, so this is the guy, right? He says he's against all acronyms. He worked for Land O'Lakes for years and years. Right?
LOL.
Yes. LOL. Yeah.
And Land O'Lakes is like the king of all acronyms.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. Almost all of corporate America
from Monsanto. We had an acronym for everything.
Yeah, Syngenta did too. Right?
And we would use them thinking everybody understood them.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah. I think every corporation does this.
Yeah, I was listening to the senator from Iowa, the older gentleman from Iowa. I can't think of his name right at the moment.
Grassley.
Morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chuck Grassley. Really nice, nice man. He was kind of wound up in his acronyms this morning. You know, he was talking about the Health and Human Services appointment. And so he was talking about the HHA, and then they started talking to him about the collision last night. And he gets to talking about the FFA when he really meant to say the FAA.
FFA.
And I got tickled, and no one would call him out on it, right? Because he's such a sincere, such a genuine person, right?
Everybody knew what he meant.
Everybody knew what he meant, right? And then he said FFA the second time, and then he corrected himself. I'm FAA, right? And so it's all good.
All right.
We all misspeak.
Well, Jeff, that's another episode. You got anything else?
No, I think that was good. We look forward to your meetings.
Great.
All right. Well, that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Please like and subscribe. Thank you.